Welcome to Toati Mecha Nach Yomi with the OU Women's Initiative. My name is Leah Meyerfeld, and today we are learning Melachim Aleph, Chapter 10. Most of us listen to the news and scroll on, even when it's brought to us in an engaging way by social media influencers or by interesting presenters. So much is happening all the time, and it's hard to keep up. We don't have attention span or the mental and emotional bandwidth for it all. This is contrary to Torah advice, which is to pay attention, process, and learn from everything around us. The Torah specifically tells us about one man and two women who acted on the news they heard. Vayishma Yitro, and Yitro heard. Rashi asks, Mashmua Shamauva, what did he hear that caused him to come? The splitting of the sea and the war with Amalek. Yitro heard about Hashem's miracles taking the Jews out of Egypt, and he has to encounter this God and these Jews himself. One generation later, Rahav in Jericho tells the spies, I have heard all the miracles that Hashem has done for the Jewish people in the desert. She requests to be saved and be part of the Jewish people and develop her own relationship with Hashem. Many generations later, the Queen of Sheba hears about King Shlomo and his God-given wisdom, his ability to understand beyond human comprehension, and she comes to Yerushalayim to find out for herself. A slight difference between this time and the previous two: the trigger for an outsider to visit now is not direct miracles of God, it's simply fame in wisdom and wealth. This presents a shift of Israel to a normal nation, but there is a recognition that this comes to the Jewish king under the protection of God, and the Queen of Sheba is intrigued. The Queen of Sheba comes to see King Shlomo. It's one of the most exciting chapters. We can develop it in our imagination, and there have been various legends and stories told in many countries about this encounter. First, let's look at a historic political angle. Shlomo has an intense connection with Hiram, an elaborate treaty with many aspects of trade and development. We know they invest in an international naval trade force. When they do business far away together, they've brought back insane amounts of gold and treasures from Africa. The story then changes direction and tells us here in chapter 10 about the Queen of Sheba. She comes to test King Shlomo with riddles. Sounds cute, but what is really going on? We're in the middle of economics and politics on a grand scale, and we see that the queen is totally in that mindset too. She comes with a huge entourage, bringing with her camels laden with gold, spices, jewels. They have deep, intimate conversations. She asks questions, shares of her deepest self. Shlomo tells her everything her heart wants to know and shows her his household, everything he has developed in governance, and sacrifices in the fabulous temple. She admits that she didn't believe all she had been told, but now she blessed Hashem when she recognizes the greatness of Israel. Beautiful, emotional. And then verse 11 and 12, suddenly Hiram also shows up again. His shipping company has just returned, bringing coral and precious gems. No one has ever seen this much coral. It is so strong and big that they can fashion large but delicate musical instruments from it. Back to our story, verse 13. Shlomo gives the Queen of Sheba everything she asked for, and she returns home. What is the dialogue and relationship between the Queen of Sheba and King Shlomo? Why is there a commercial break suddenly reminding us in the middle of their story about the huge wealth of Hiram, and then shift immediately back to the Queen of Sheba? This isn't personal. It's all in a day's work. You need to understand the connection between the Queen's visit with King Shlomo and Hiram's relationship with him. We've said Hiram and King Shlomo signed a shipping trade agreement. Hiram, living off the Lebanese coast of today, always ruled the northern seas. The south had done trade through land. Camels come up from Africa, through the Middle East, and then further east into Europe. And the Middle East is wealthy because of the land trade. Now it's upturned. There's developed sea trade. Shlomo's Israel empire gives Hiram access to the south, and together they sail towards Africa. This is a tale of a startup that became a financial empire, international agreement that avoids land, avoids the need to pay anyone else access, no other partners, direct access to all wealth and treasures from Africa. Many countries now lost their financial power, and this is the main reason that the Queen Sheba comes. The Queen Sheba sits in Africa, on the Red Sea, and the Queen wants to make sure that she has signed the most profitable trade agreements. She comes to show her worth and commercial connections. She brings three main gifts: gold, spices and perfumes, and precious gems. When Hiram comes, he brings gold, coral, and precious gems, parallel items with coral instead of spices. Hiram is coming to say, look at what you have with me. It's competition between Hiram and Queen of Sheba. Who will win Shlomo's heart and mind? We are told that with Hiram, the ocean trade brings special things that she can't offer, that the land trade can't offer. peacocks and monkeys, music. Chiram is financial and national interest. Seems like win-win. But the queen offers something else, something alluring. The perfume and spices, the smells and more. Something intimate she creates with Shlomo, the personal relationship. The riddles are all about women and intimacy and relationships. She talks to him in a personal way. They share wisdom and understanding. It's an intimate relationship, not just business. The queen brings fragrance into the equation, the scent that touches your soul. And she wins out over Chiram. Shlomo commits to her and signs agreements with her, and we hear no more about ocean commerce. Chiram is out of the picture. The ocean routes are closed. The new trade agreements with Africa have been decided, and great wealth is amassed. As with everything, there is another angle. There is a deep philosophical and religious relationship that develops here too. We are told right from the start the Queen of Sheba hears the fame of Shlomo and what he had done through the name of God. Umelkat Shva shomat et shem Shlomo l'shem Hashem. The Queen of Sheba is at a point in her life. She's exhausted all sources of knowledge in her own realm. She's run out of challenges, yet still she refuses to settle. In order to find answers to her questions, she leaves the security and comfort of her kingdom in a quest for wisdom that takes her far away from her safety zone. She's looking for a place where she can keep growing intellectually and spiritually. The queen travels in luxury, recognizing the cost of wisdom. As a woman and a foreigner, she understands the importance of making a significant impression to be taken seriously. Her journey to Yerushalayim involves a substantial investment, camels laden with spices, gold, and precious stones. Despite initial skepticism, she seeks answers from King Shlomo, who impresses her with his vast knowledge and generosity. Her doubts did not deter her from the quest. Instead, her determination leads to a rewarding exchange of wisdom. A point may come in our lives when we will not be able to find clarity in our endeavors. It may also happen that someone will ask us for help in figuring it out answers to their hard questions. This narrative offers a lesson in perseverance and generosity, reminding us that in times of uncertainty or when others seek our guidance, we should be prepared to embark on journeys for answers or share our wisdom generously. In doing so, our rewards may surpass expectations. The Queen of Sheba comes with riddles, and in the text we aren't told what the queen's riddles were, but the Midrash relates four riddles that she posed to King Shlomo, and they are deep and probing. The queen's riddles all relate to gender and family and require King Shlomo to have a knowledge of Torah, specifically as it relates to non-Jews and worldly knowledge. He clarifies to her that all his wisdom comes only from God, for Hashem grants wisdom, knowledge and understanding are by his decree. Ki Hashem yiten chokhma mipiv dat utvuna. The first riddle. The queen of Sheba asked, what are the seven that depart and nine that enter, the two that offer drink and the one that drinks? Shlomo answered, the seven that depart are the 7 days of menstrual impurity. The nine that enter are the 9 months of pregnancy. The two that offer drink are the breasts, and the child is the one who drinks. The Queen of Sheba wants to know how Torah understands the female's reproductive cycle, menstruation, pregnancy, birth, and nursing. For example, we know that ancient and some even current African cultures thought demons controlled women's bodies. She is asking how Torah approaches all issues feminine. Shlomo's wisdom is evident in his discovery of the solution to the riddle regarding feminine matters and his explanation of the Torah's understanding of gender. The second riddle, she asked him, how can a woman say to her son, your father is my father, your grandfather my husband, you are my son, and I am your sister? Shlomo replied, the two daughters of Lot, who became pregnant by their father and bore sons. This second riddle is about the family unit. It threatens the generational hierarchy within the family. By interchanging father and grandfather, husband and father, mother and sister, the solution restores the normal order, since it reveals that this is an exceptional case, which held good only for the daughters of Lot. Shlomo explains to her the sanctity of family in Jewish life, the power of sexuality and holy relationships. Queen of Sheba then brought before him children who were of the same height and who were dressed alike. She asked him to distinguish between the males and the females. Shlomo asked his assistants to scatter nuts and candy before the children. The males, who were not bashful, collected them and tied them within the hems of their garments. The girls, however, were bashful, since their bodies would be revealed, and therefore tied them only within their outer garments. Shlomo told the queen, these are the males, and these are the females. This third riddle indicates the differences between men and women that are already noticeable in young children. Shlomo shared with her his knowledge and understanding of human nature. Finally, the Queen of Sheba brought a number of people before Shlomo, some circumcised and others uncircumcised. She asked him to distinguish between them. Shlomo immediately made a sign to the high priest to open the Ark of the Covenant. Those who were circumcised stood or bowed their bodies to half their height, while their faces were filled with the radiance of the Shekhinah. The uncircumcised, however, fell on their faces. Shlomo immediately told the Queen of Sheba, "These are the uncircumcised, and these are the circumcised." This last riddle regards male sexuality and circumcision. Shlomo shows that this physical difference has spiritual consequences, since these two groups exhibit disparate religious behavior. The spiritual is intertwined with the physical, and so must be part of every person's life and their relationships. King Shlomo's ability to answer the queen's four riddles is indicative of his wisdom and understanding of gender and sexuality and the deep spiritual nature of individuals and relationships. We read the text, and the Midrash and our imagination is encouraged. All the legends from various countries around the world talk of the relationship between Queen of Sheba and King Shlomo. She comes with deep questions, but she does this in a feminine way, and she forges a relationship with Shlomo. It seems that it was clear to everyone that something personal developed here, a connection beyond the rational. We know that when you learn Torah with someone, it builds a true relationship. Many of the legends tell of a son born to them. It's the basis of the Ethiopian legend regarding Melanik, Prince of Ethiopia. Many believe the Ethiopian Jews of today are descendants of the Queen of Sheba and King Shlomo. And even Rashi, though he goes in another direction. Rashi teaches that the king of Babel, Nebuchadnezzar, is born from this union. Something intimate and internal is starting here, something eternal. The chapter ends with descriptions of Shlomo's wealth that are beyond comprehension. We know he now has an alliance with the Queen of Sheba and Hiram, king of Tzur. This brings Shlomo copious amounts of gold in addition to trade ships and merchants who bring in not just gold but ivory, monkey, and peacocks. He receives gifts and taxes from all the lands, bringing him spices and coral and animals. He purchases thousands of horses and chariots from Egypt. King Shlomo famously builds himself a throne of ivory coated in gold with lions on each side. Six steps lead up to it with lions on each step. There's a further Midrashic tradition that describes in great detail the decorations of King Shlomo's throne and some kind of mechanical automation. When Shlomo began to ascend to his seat, the machinery of the throne was put into motion. A golden ox raised him from the first to the second step. He was then raised step by step up to the sixth, where angels took and placed him upon his seat. When Shlomo would reach the seat of the throne, hands came out to receive him. When the king sat down and leaned backwards, he rested on half a young bull, and all was fastened together with gold. A golden scepter was suspended behind it, on top of which was a dove. In the dove's mouth was a golden crown, that because of its great weight hovered just over Shlomo's head when he was sitting on his throne. When he was seated, another eagle set another royal crown upon his head. Midrashic lore recalls that no other monarch succeeded in sitting on Shlomo's throne. When in the early 6th century BCE, the Egyptian pharaoh tried to ascend Shlomo's throne, he was injured by one of the lions, resulting in his thereafter being called Pharaoh Necho, the cripple. Shlomo's throne seems to have eventually made it to Rome, where Rabbi Elazar de Rabbi Yossi says he saw fragments of it in the 2nd century. All have heard of King Shlomo's wealth, and his godly wisdom is known far and wide. The fact that God granted Shlomo wisdom was not in itself what really impressed the Queen of Sheba. His wealth was not actually impressive to her either. We are privy to part of the conversation. The queen says to him, "God has established you as king to do justice and righteousness. Why are you powerful? To do justice and righteousness. That is the only legitimate purpose for which government is established." Ultimately, the true greatness of King Shlomo is his own drive to do what is right with all of his godly gifts. Such commitment is a tool available to us all to motivate our own growth and permeate everything we do. And it's that commitment that can truly earn the respect of others and give us pride in ourselves. Thank you for studying together, Lilui Neshamot Imoteno Yekarot, Esther Oppenheimer Alea Shalom, and Sarah Schenker Alea Shalom, each deeply devoted and proud to transmit their family's Torah legacy to the next generations.